Please rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Werke, Judge Gaetis, Judge Kirk, the Honorable Judge Renee L. Werke presiding.
Good morning. Go ahead and have a seat, everyone. Oh, somebody fixed my chair. Must have been our marshal. Took care of the seating. I laughed because last week when I came in, the chair was so low, I felt like I was a child sitting at the stand. Anyway, good morning and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We only have three items on our calendar for oral presentation today, January 18, 2024. Want to remind you, each of you has 15 minutes for presentation of your case. 5 minutes is always reserved to appellant counsel for a rebuttal if you choose to use that. As it relates to the podium that you'll be speaking from, there's also a button there to adjust it for your height preference. I want to also remind you to state your name and indicate the party you're speaking on behalf of before you begin your remarks, and that is, again, for recording purposes. With all of the housekeeping done, I'll ask our marshal to call the first case for consideration.
Now hearing case number A230747, Barwar versus Sood.
Good morning.
Good morning.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Ruta Johnson, and I represent appellant Father Anshul Bardwaj in this appeal. It is firmly established United States public policy that international child abduction or wrongful retention is extremely serious, is harmful to children, and it's abusive to children, and it should be prevented by all means necessary. This is consistent with Minnesota law that stability in children's custody is in the child's best interest. Protecting a child from harm as a result of a parenting time schedule is precisely why we are here today.
What I struggle with on this case, first of all, I am concerned that the country of India is not a part of the Hague Convention, but what concerns me about this case is that we are looking at findings that were made by a district court judge who obviously heard the parties, considered the issues, and there's no finding that this child is at risk of abduction. So here we are as an appellate court. How are we to remedy the relief you're seeking when we are not in a position to revisit the findings?
Your Honor, the findings are there, and that's part of the issue with this case, is that the findings that this child is at risk for abduction are there, and they're consistent with the UCAPA findings that were discussed by one of the experts, Mr. Morley. And so the UCAPA factors for that put children at risk for abduction. And so for those particular factors, our district court made all of the right findings. The court found that mother abruptly removed the child from his residence of 3 years and withheld the location of child from father for 8 months. The court found that mother violated the party's judgment and decree, Appendix A, by failing to disclose the child's address. The court found that mother essentially announced that she was possibly considering retaining the child in India when, after the court's issuance of the order awarding parenting time in India, she disclosed to the child or stated to the child that he's coming home for good. That's a significant issue. The court found that there was abuse, that mother struck the child across his face, that she exposed him to conflict, that she disregarded his well-being in terms of his health, dental health to be specific. The court also found that mother filed a police report in India alleging that father abducted the child, which was after the court had placed the child in father's custody in the United States. Mother had noticed. She knew that that is what the court had issued as an order. The child was not permitted.
I'll call it a safety net, but what about the conditions the court put in connection with this file that mom had to do many things as a protection against the harm that you are fearing? Are you saying they're not adequate? I mean, she has to do a lot before the child would even leave.
Certainly, Your Honor. The conditions that the court placed on mother are essentially meaningless. The court did two things, essentially. One was award father sole physical custody under the the impression that the sole physical custody label would give father something to work with in India court should mom retain the child. And then the second piece that the court ordered mother to comply with is prior to the child's travel to India to notify the U.S. Embassy in India that mother intended to exercise parenting time in India and intended to return the child. U.S. Embassy has no control, no enforcement power, no ability to force mother to comply with returning the child if mother chooses not to do so. It's basically a notice, and that's it. It doesn't give father any leverage. It doesn't give father any expedited rights in India courts because India is not a signatory to the Hague Convention. That was Mr. I apologize, Your Honor, for interrupting. That was Mr. Tiagi, who was the trial expert that testified that there was some trend with courts giving some deference. Part of the issue.
Mr. Morley also indicated that in his, the information you attached, which obviously came along later. I thought there was something Morley along the same line.
Not to the same extent, for sure. Mr. Morley really cautioned and drove home the fact that when it comes to India court system, any kind of a custody order from a different jurisdiction is merely a document that's there. The India court does not have any obligation to follow that order. There is no similar law like we have UCCJEA, where a foreign court order would be registered. They can consider it, and they can apply it, but they don't have to.
But counsel, the district court didn't have the benefit of Morley's affidavit at the time that it was making its parenting time decision, right? That was something that was presented in connection with the motion for a stay pending appeal?
That is correct, Your Honor.
And I'm wondering, at this juncture, you know, we have a district court order that doesn't consider two pieces of evidence, the Morley affidavit and the new information that mother failed to comply with the condition requiring notice to the U.S. Embassy. What are we to do as the reviewing court with those two pieces of information and the district court's order, which didn't take those things into account?
Certainly. The two pieces that the court didn't have the benefit of examining at the time of issuing the original order are still illustrative and provide the totality of circumstances for this court to consider when evaluating a district court's findings and decisions in terms of the factors that were present and were presented to the court. The Morley report and the Mr. Tiagi report, and Mr. Tiagi was, again, the expert that testified at trial, they're very similar.
Wouldn't we have to send it back to the district court to analyze it before we would have bad at it?
That is certainly an option, sending it back to the district court to analyze and weigh the additional evidence of mother's statements, of her failure to comply with the requirements of the new report in terms of India's compliance, to weigh that again with the record. I do think that this court could remand, could reverse the award of parenting time in India based on the record, just the trial record, because again, the information is there. It just seemed that there was a lot of inconsistency with the district court in making findings for the purpose of custody modification versus for the purpose of awarding the parenting time schedule. And it's kind of, it's kind of a convoluted issue because the abduction factors, the risk factors associated with India court all flow into the best interest analysis. And so one of the issues that I request this court to pay close attention to is the inconsistency in the court's analysis for custody modification and parenting time award. The standard the court found appropriately was the same. It was an endangerment-based standard. And when the court analyzed all of the factors for the endangerment-based standard and found that mother had struck the child, that she had left the child unattended, that she had allowed the child's dental health to get to a fairly significant issue, that she disrupted the child's relationships, that she had hid the child or secreted, I think the word was that the court used, the court found that mother had subjected the child to a significant risk and that custody should have been placed with father. Immediately after making these findings, the court turns around and says, for the purposes of parenting time, I'm going to prioritize the location of the child's time with mother. And the court found that it was important to maintain relationships, for the child to maintain relationships in India, while just several findings back, the court found that mother had disrupted those relationships already. And so
you mean as far as sister and grandmother?
Yes.
Not the little friend or whatever that he would have had in India?
Well, that's part of the issue, Your Honor, in that the court noted that mother really didn't present any evidence, and it was very unclear to the court what this child's life would be like if he was in India again. There was no testimony about what friendships would be maintained, whether there was any rekindling of connection between mother and family members, or what she would do to ensure that the child has those connections. And so it's surprising to see the court then say, I found that these relationships are disrupted. We don't know anything about the friend, or we know there's a dog. That's essentially, which is important. That's essentially it. But the court doesn't really explain, doesn't weigh the harm. And this is where the risk of abduction and the protracted litigation in India comes in. The court doesn't weigh the harm of parenting time in India against the harm that the child would experience if there was no parenting time in India. And that is a key consideration.
Share with me, because I'm trying to figure out how this relief shakes out. And you know, I mean, if we said family cases, custody cases, that stuff happens, and it takes a while to come to the Court of Appeals, and I hate for the reviewing court to be in a position where stuff happens after the district court makes a decision, so then we have to send it back, and we end up doing this ping-pong thing back and forth. So I somewhat resist remanding for the judge to take a look at best interest with that additional information, but then on the other hand, if we would affirm, that doesn't prohibit you from going ahead with yet another motion of endangerment because you've now got the new stuff, the mom's statement or whatever the document is, that would allege endangerment, which would allow you to escape the two-year limit on motions. So what scenario, for your client, and I'm not tipping my hand, let alone the panel's, but for your client, what is the most advantageous avenue in terms of where this goes, because this can just continue and filings and filings and, you know, never end until the child, of course, reaches the age of majority.
That is unfortunately correct. This is the type of a case that has the potential for never ending, whether jurisdiction is in Minnesota or whether the child goes to India and is retained there. And so from my client's perspective, what needs to happen is that parenting time needs to be restricted to occur in the United States. Whether it's Minnesota or Utah, doesn't matter. Mr. Bardwaj has demonstrated, and the record is replete with evidence, that he is supportive of the child's relationship with mother, is willing and able to accommodate that relationship and visits parenting time between mother and child, but is extremely concerned that if the child sets foot in India, that is going to be the last time that he sees his child.
But and the district court, who is in the best position to make factual findings and credibility findings based on the evidence, considered other factors in determining that parenting time in India would be appropriate, right? I mean, and one of those factors is whether mom can even travel here and stay here. And it seems to me that the district court was concerned that such an order would deprive mom entirely of parenting time, and shouldn't we take that into account, the district court's balancing of that piece of the puzzle?
So, Your Honor, part of the issue was that there was no evidence in the record to suggest that mom couldn't travel. Mom, in fact, can travel, and the court was aware of that. The issue that was discussed is that the guardian ad litem recommended that parenting time schedule changes to an equal parenting time schedule when and if mom moves to the United States. And the court was concerned about whether mom is going to be able to move to the United States. So her relationship with the child is not disrupted because she's still able to come and exercise parenting time in the U.S. The court's findings were...
For a whole summer, is the record clear that she has the ability to come here and spend a whole summer here, or, you know, to just up and move here?
I don't believe that the record supports a conclusion that mom is able to up and move here, and I don't know that the extent of how long mom would be able to stay here was part of the record, but that mom can travel and exercise parenting time in the U.S. and has been doing so is part of the record.
Isn't that generally 90 days, though?
I believe so, Your Honor.
And then she has to go back, and then she could come again. But
yes. So, and if you look at the 90 days being the standard, that would cover the summer parenting time.
Does the record say that, or is that just an assumption?
I think that's an assumption, Your Honor. I don't believe that the record actually says that. But again, I see that I'm running out of time. To conclude, the court didn't really address how sending the child to India with just a custody label modification corrects or mitigates the risk for abuse, for continued to disrupt relationships, disrupting the relationship with dad, striking the child. Those things were not considered by the court, and that harm was not weighed. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Katie Jarvie. I am here on behalf of respondent Aprajita Sood. It is respondent's position that the district court acted within its broad discretion when it issued its December 5th, 2022 order regarding custody and parenting time in this matter. This court must have a definite and firm conviction that a mistake was made in order to reverse the decision of the district court. Respondent submits and believes the record reflects that the district court did not make a mistake in its December 5th, 2022 ruling. This record must be reviewed in the light most favorable to the district court. The record in this case clearly reflects that the district court weighed all of the evidence. The district court heard 3 days of testimony, including expert testimony, read an expert report, heard from family, friends, extended family of the parties. The district court made very detailed and specific findings regarding each best interest factor in this case.
Counsel, wouldn't you agree, though, if the district court got it wrong and the child doesn't come back from India, that that's a really lousy outcome?
Absolutely, Your Honor.
And do you understand that that happens a lot?
Indeed. Okay. It happens.
As a trial court judge and as a prosecutor, I've had at least 2 cases where that happened.
Indeed, Your Honor, and it happens in countries that are parties to the Hague Convention, and it happens in countries that are not parties to the Hague Convention.
But it's a little more difficult when they're not a party. You got to admit that.
Indeed. I think it's important to note that one of the findings that the district court made was with regard to the cross-examination of respondent's attorney with Mr. Tyagi. The court found that cross-examination persuasive and credible. Part of that cross-examination was discussing a 2020 case whereby the Indian case, whereby the Indian court ordered the return of the minor child back to the parent in the United States. The minor child in that case was a United States citizen. One of the things also that I think is important is the expert testified that there is in fact a trend towards returning children to the custodial parent as part of the Indian case law. Many of the cases that have been cited in the expert reports are now over 10 years old, and that case law may not, in fact, be relevant. And in fact,
I noticed one of the cases that the expert Morley, I think, referred to, involved a case where the court, and I think it was an Indian case too, but where the court here had required the posting of a rather large bond. Is that something that was ever considered in this case?
I don't believe so, Your Honor. That was not something that was ever discussed, and I don't believe it's ever been discussed in the record, nor was it discussed in the district court's decision.
But you would agree if the child doesn't come back that there would be tremendous legal costs and time delays, even if ultimately India said the child should go back?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I think the district court made appropriate restrictions within what I think the district court found to be the party's circumstances, individual circumstances.
But now it seems, based on what's happened in the interim, that your client didn't follow through with notifying the embassy.
And I think, so there's some context to that and some reasoning behind that that I don't think
this... Before you go to the context, will you lace into that my question to Ms. Johnson about best scenario for your client because this information wasn't analyzed by the court in the ping-ponging of family court?
Certainly. In terms of the best case scenario for my client, it would be that this court affirms the decision of the district court. However, if this court were to remand this and reverse this decision back down, it would be that the district court would consider other restrictions potentially. Or
I guess what I'm getting at is if we send it back to have the district court analyze the information, the district court could decide whether it wanted to have more testimony or another hearing. And my concern is if the motion is renewed under the endangerment by these new documents, then you're back to having an evidentiary hearing, and then it just seems as if the lawyers and the parties are going to spend all of this child's time in court, and nothing is ever going to happen. And then what happened with her failure to, Judge Kirk's question, her failure to comply with the restrictions?
Sure. So that could be... that could be a possibility where the parties continue to litigate this. I think that's a possibility in many, many cases, an unfortunate possibility. However, one of the reasons, and my client's affidavit reflected this, was that she didn't have the dates of travel at that point, and she wanted to provide the dates of travel to the embassy. She did not have it. Judge Peralta felt that his order didn't require her to provide dates. She did not interpret it that way. She wanted to provide dates to the U.S. Embassy. The child's travel was not confirmed at that time. So she did not have those dates. That's why she did not provide that information to the embassy. She did actually thereafter contact the embassy and provide that information, but at the time that Judge Peralta heard the motion, she had not done that for that reason. While the district court did find evidence that there was previous endangerment sufficient to warrant a modification of custody, the testimony regarding the circumstances of the facts of endangerment was quite complex. The decision made by the district court in this case was based on, again, 3 days of testimony. There's significant context buried in the record of the testimony of these parties. And of course, the district court engaged in its own credibility determinations regarding that testimony and the circumstances of this particular case. Of note, the parties do have a history of exchanging the child successfully between India and the United States. And I think that that is something that that the judge did hear and consider. The appellant presented evidence in his motion for reconsideration from yet another expert, Expert Morley. Mr. Morley's declaration contained his report and, of course, the very similar information to the expert that the court heard during trial, Mr. Tiaghi. I think one significant difference between the admission of these reports is that respondent had the opportunity to cross-examine. And as I previously stated, the court did make a specific finding that it found that respondent's cross-examination was persuasive. And I think that that's an important piece for this court to consider as appellant asks you to make the determination that the court didn't consider that information. Indeed, the expert conclusions are not simply as straightforward as appellant would have this court believe, and many of the cases that were cited involve children who are not United States citizens, which I think is important. The conclusions of Mr. Morley rely only on the information that has been given by the appellant. We don't know how much information Mr. Morley has received. And in fact, in one of the exhibits, I'd note that Mr. Morley states that litigation on average in India takes about 10 years. And in fact, that includes all types of litigation in India, not just family court cases.
Of course, this kid would grow up in 10 years, I suppose. Huh?
They do. I believe they do, Your Honor.
Is he nine now? Or?
I believe he is, yes. Yes. The district court in this matter made very detailed findings. And in fact, the district court did go through every factor, weighed the importance of the minor child having time with his mother, both in the United States and in India, the practicality of mother coming to the United States for parenting time, as opposed to having that parenting time in India. It is mother simply can't uproot herself and come to the United States for 90 days at a time or for a summer period at a time. She has a job, she has obligations and other things that she's responsible for. There's a dog in India as well. And those things are also indicators of the fact that she has a life there and she has obligations and is much less likely to abscond with the child. I think one thing that is important is that appellant has made a number of allegations that either don't rely on any context with regard to whether or not the mother would abscond with the minor child, but also don't have not factually been proven. One of the allegations was that mother told the child that he was going to come back to India for good. That was a statement that was made in an affidavit after the trial, and mother absolutely denies that statement. And so in terms of the risk factors that that the court might be considering, some of those factors are not exactly facts within the record at this point. We believe at this time that the district court, as fact finder, appropriately weighed the testimony of the experts, analyzed the wrongful retention of the minor child, and found that it was in the minor child's best interest to preserve the relationship with his mother and maintain the ties that he has in India. The respondent respectfully requests that the court affirm the ruling of the district court in this matter. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Jarvie. And Ms. Johnson, you have the last word.
Thank you. With regards to the case Your Honor referred to, that was the Arizona case, Len, that was cited by Mr. Morley, as well as in our brief. In that case, the country discussed was Kuwait, and the court did order that if father were to have parenting time with the children and travel with the children to Kuwait, he had to post $2.5 million bond per child in order to do that. And one of the things that
came
out.
But but just point out, bonding is just like bail bonds in the criminal world. It's just becoming more and more of a fixture in our global society with children moving around. I believe Judge Kirk asked if your client was opposed to such a notion. I'm just curious.
My client's issue is not going to be remedied by a bond that the cash bond that mother would post.
So what you're saying is that is insufficient, that still is not going to protect his interests?
Correct, Your Honor, because one of the biggest issues is that if this child disappears in India, or even if he doesn't, if mother fails to return him as is ordered by the court, he has no remedy. Just this Sunday, the New York Times reported on the issues in the India court system. And what stood out from this report was that right now there are 50 million cases, and it will take 300 years to clear the backlog of the India court system. And yes, that includes other types of cases, but family court is part of that. There's also a nod in this article as to the corruption in the India system. And so the court, Judge Peralta, recognized that there is a really significant risk that this child is going to become a legal football, is what Judge Peralta referred to the child as. And that is exactly what we're trying to prevent here. In terms of Ms. Jarvie's assertion that her client denied the allegation that she informed the child would be returning home for good, that's not accurate. If this court reviews Ms. Sood's affidavit, which is part of the record, she does not deny making the statement. And that's concerning. In terms of providing context that she wanted to include her itinerary or the child's itinerary to the U.S. Embassy, that's also not accurate. The court order is very clear. Judge Peralta instructed her to email U.S. Embassy 30 days prior to intended exercise of parenting time, which was supposed to commence within a week of the child being let out of school. She didn't do that. There was no requirement that the itinerary should be provided. In terms of the court's consideration of the practicality of the parenting time award, that's also challenging. For example, Judge Peralta awarded Ms. Sood 10 days of parenting time over the winter break with the child in India. The court didn't take into the account that India is 11 and a half hours ahead of us, and it would take at least 4 days of travel to accommodate this type of a trip. Surely that cannot be in the child's best interest. This child is not going to have the ability to acclimate to the change in, first of all, to the travel, to the change in time zones. He is going to be coming back after winter break, thrust immediately into school without any opportunity to adjust. That's a practical reality that was not really considered by the court. The court's order in terms of the parenting time provisions is also inconsistent. The court ordered that the parent who is sending the child for parenting time must ensure the child's safe travel, yet the parent who is receiving is ordered to travel with the child. It seemed like not a lot of thought was given to these provisions, and that has created some challenges in practical implementation. Mr. Morley, in his expert submission, referred to India as a safe haven for child abductions, and that is exactly what it is. And while, yes, the court is right that there is always a risk that a parent will not return the child to the other parent at the conclusion of their parenting time, this case has the makings of a very serious child abuse case based on the abduction allegations and based on the historical information that the court has already reviewed and the harm that mother has subjected the child to. There is nothing in the record to suggest that based on the very detailed findings that the court made for endangerment-based custody modification, why those same findings do not apply to parenting time restriction, and that is a significant issue that I ask this court to take a look at and reverse district court's decision. Thank you.
Thank you to both attorneys for appearing and arguing in support of your client's position. The arguments are very helpful to the panel. These are obviously issues that we don't take lightly, nor do your clients. A decision will be issued within the statutory time frame. And again, thank you for coming.